Hi.
Hello, Jeffrey.
I thought maybe I was got my date wrong, being the first on already, but
Me too. I tried to join the meeting about 3 minutes ago, and there
okay.
was no meeting.
Reason, I don't know why. Just it was a bit tardy, maybe.
Well, probably people are watching the inauguration.
You think?
Well, I was until a few minutes ago.
Maybe I'll send off a quick note to Andrea. I don't
Yeah, maybe they know something that we don't know.
know.
I'll send a text to Mateo. I wonder if Andrea has electricity.
Well, maybe. Maybe that's
There
the issue.
are some predictions of high winds over in that area where she lives.
Okay. But Marco's not here either, so,
No.
or Matthew, so.
No, so I sent a text to Matteo, but he hasn't received it. He hasn't seen it yet.
I suppose we could read on our own.
Sure.
I mean, I had a meeting on Tuesday, normally with five people, and only Andrea and I showed up, so we read anyway. It was for the Vedas, the secret of the Veda.
Yeah, this text I sent hasn't even registered with Mateo yet. Well, there's Andrea. Hi, Andrea.
You're muted. You're muted.
Thanks for catching my attention. I was thinking if we were going to do synthesis at noon.
Got your dates mixed up for the different things.
I
It can happen easily.
It did. Let me go get my glasses. I'll be right back.
Is this part being recorded, Jeffrey?
It seems to be. I didn't do anything, but
I
suppose I could turn it off and turn it on again, and that would be, and you know, and we do the sort of intro piece.
Yeah, that would.
Oh, I'm not host.
There's no host. I just looked.
I can't turn it off. Is there a way to make myself host? I don't know. Well, it's recording anyway, so maybe we don't fiddle with it at all.
This won't be a very interesting first 7 minutes for the
anybody
who views it. So this must be just a calendared meeting, and it apparently does not require a host.
Okay, sorry, get myself together.
So no sign of Matteo or Marco, and we don't know why, so.
maybe more of us got confused.
I haven't received any communication from either one of them.
Uh-huh. Well, it is 7 after 10, so.
Yeah, we should, it is a short text today, right?
It's not so long.
In the self of mind, is that what we're reading?
Very short, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Who is going to record?
Well, it's already recording and none of us is host, so we can't. I was going to turn it off and turn it on again, but I can't because I'm not host.
Oh,
and John Robert isn't host either. So it seems to be, anyway.
It'll be what it is.
So we're reading Canto 13 in this, so book 2, Canto 13 in the self of mind. Why don't we do it, John, Robert, me, and Andrea, since that seems to be the order on my screen anyway. Okay. And Andrea, you got the gong for a little.
That's right. I even have that. I do. Okay, let me also get my timer. Okay.
Book two, the book of the traveler of the worlds. Canto 13, in the self of mind. At last there came a bare, indifferent sky where silence listened to the cosmic voice, but answered nothing to a million calls. The soul's endless question met with no response. An abrupt conclusion ended eager hopes, a deep cessation in a mighty calm, a Venus line on the last page of thought, and a margin and a blank of wordless peace. There paused the climbing hierarchy of worlds. He stood on a wide arc of summit space, alone with an enormous self of mind, which held all life in a corner of its vasts. Omnipotent, immobile, and aloof, in the world which sprang from it, it took no part. It gave no heed to the paeans of victory. It was indifferent to its own defeats. It heard the cry of grief and made no sign. Impartial fell its gaze on evil and good. It saw destruction come and did not move. An equal cause of things, a lonely seer and master of its multitude of forms, it acted not, but bore all thoughts and deeds. The witness, Lord of nature's myriad acts, consenting to the movements of her force. His mind reflected this vast quietism. This witness hush is the thinker's secret base. Hidden in silent depths, the word is formed. From hidden sentences, the act is born. From hidden silences, the act is born. Into the voiceful mind, the laboring world. In secrecy wraps the seed the eternal sows, silence, the mystic birthplace of the soul.
In God's supreme, withdrawn, and timeless hush, a seeing self and potent energy met. The silence knew itself, and thought took form. Self-made from the dual power, creation rose. In the still self he lived, and it in him, its mute, immorable listening depths, its vastness and its stillness were its own. One being with it, he grew wide, powerful, free. Apart, unbound, he looked on all things done. As one who builds his own imagined scenes and loses not himself in what he sees, spectator of a drama self-conceived, he looked on the world and watched its motive thoughts with the burden of luminous prophecy in their eyes. Its forces with their feet of wind and fire arisen from the dumbness in his soul. All now he seemed to understand and know. Desire came not, nor any gust of will. The great perturbed inquirer lost his task. Nothing was asked, nor wanted any more. There he could stay, the self, the silent one. His soul had peace, it knew the cosmic whole. Then suddenly a luminous finger fell on all things seen, or touched, or heard, or felt, and showed his mind that nothing could be known. That must be reached from which all knowledge comes. The skeptic ray disrupted all that seems and mote at the very roots of thought and sense. In a universe of nescience, they have grown, aspiring towards a superconscient sun. playing in shine and rain from heavenlier skies. They never can win, however high their reach, or overpass, however keen their probe. Distrust was thrown upon mind's instruments. All that it takes for reality's shining coin, proof fact, fixed inference, deduction clear, firm theory, assured significance, appeared as frauds upon time's credit bank or assets valueless in truth's treasury.
An ignorance on an uneasy throne, travestied with a fortuitous sovereignty, a figure of knowledge garbed in dubious words and tinsel thought forms brightly inadequate. A laborer in the dark, dazzled by half light. What it knew was an image in a broken glass. What it saw was real, but its sight untrue. All the ideas in its vast repertory were like the mutterings of a transient cloud that spent itself in sound and left no trace. A frail house hanging in uncertain air, the thin, ingenious web round which it moves, put out a while on the tree of the universe and gathered up into itself again, was only a trap to catch life's insect food. Winged thoughts that flutter fragile in brief light, but dead, once captured in fixed forms of mind. Aims puny, but looming large in man's small scale. Flickers of imagination's brilliant gauze and cobweb-wrapped beliefs alive no more. The magic hut of built-up certitudes made out of glittering dust and bright moonshine, in which it shrines its image of the real, collapsed into the nescience whence it rose. Only a gleam was there of symbol facts that shroud the mystery lurking in their glow, and falsehoods based on hidden realities by which they live until they fall from time. Our mind is a house haunted by the slain past, ideas soon mummified, ghosts of old truths, God's spontaneities tied with formal strings and packed into drawers of reason's trim bureau, the grave of great lost opportunities, or an office for misuse of soul and life, and all the waste man makes of heaven's gifts, and all his squanderings of nature's store, a stage for the comedy of ignorance.
The world seemed a long aeonic failure scene. All sterile grew. No base was left secure. Assailed by the edge of the convicting beam, the builder reason lost her confidence in the successful sleight and turn of thought that makes the soul the prisoner of a phrase. Its highest wisdom was a brilliant guess, its mighty structured science of the worlds, a passing light on being surfaces. There was nothing there but a schema drawn by sense, a substitute for eternal mysteries, a scrawl figure of reality, a plan and elevation by the architect word imposed upon the semblances of time. Existence's self was overshadowed by a doubt. Almost it seemed a lotus leaf afloat on a nude pool of cosmic nothingness. This great spectator and creator mind was only some half-seeing's delegate, a veil that hung between the soul and light, an idol not the living body of God. Even the still spirit that looks upon its works with some pale front of the unknowable. A shadow seemed the wide and witness self, its liberation and immobile calm, a void recoil of being from time-made things, not the self-vision of eternity. Deep peace was there, but not the nameless force. Our sweet and mighty mother was not there, who gathers to her bosom her children's lives, her clasp that takes the world into her arms in the fathomless rapture of the infinite, the bliss that is creation's splendid grain or the white passion of God ecstasy that laughs in the blaze of the boundless heart of love.
A greater spirit than the self of mind must answer to the questioning of his soul. For here was no firm clue, no sure road. High climbing pathways seized in the unknown. An artist's sight constructed the beyond in contrary patterns and conflicting cues. A part experience fragmented the whole. He looked above, but all was blank and still. A sapphire firmament of abstract thought escaped into a formless vacancy. He looked below, but all was dark and mute. A noise was heard between of thought and prayer, a strife, a labor without end or pause. A vain and ignorant seeking raised its voice. A rumor and a movement, and a call, a foaming mass, a cry innumerable rolled ever upon the ocean surge of life along the coasts of mortal ignorance. On its unstable and enormous breast, beings and forces, forms, ideas like waves jostled for figure and supremacy and rose and sank and rose again in time. And at the bottom of the sleepless stir, a nothingness parent of the struggling worlds, a huge creator death, a mystic void, forever sustaining the irrational cry, forever excluding the supernal word, motionless, refusing question and response, reposed beneath the voices and the march, the dim, inconscient, dumb uncertitude. Two firmaments of darkness and of light opposed their limits to the spirit's walk. It moved veiled in from self's infinity in a world of beings and momentary events where all must die to live and live to die. Immortal by renewed mortality, it wandered in the spiral of its acts or ran around the cycles of its thought, yet was no more than its original self, and knew no more than when it first began. To be was a prison, extinction the escape. End of Canto 13.
Well, it starts so beautiful with him becoming completely silent. And then it goes into this ignorance, kind of not quite getting how that happened.
Yeah, I don't know, John Robert, if you have any insights on what we're reading here. Usually you do.
Well, what happened was, let's see. Then suddenly, this is on page 284, then suddenly a luminous finger fell on all things seen or touched or heard or felt and showed his mind that nothing could be known. So there's a doubt that comes in, which is part of mind, and shows him the futility of it. The last, very last line reminds me of Sartre. to be was a prison, extinction, the escape.
So this luminous finger, that is a kind of an image that I have in Savitri, that it is usually the mother coming in, but then all she does is reveal the darkness of the mind.
Well, I don't know if it's the mother, but Sri Aurobindo does say that in this place where of emptiness and of nothingness, and there's peace there, he says, but not the nameless force. So what's missing is
right.
Our sweet and mighty mother was not there, he says.
Right. Is that a line in here somewhere?
The sweet it's on page 286, just a couple of lines from the bottom of the page.
Oh, yeah. Right, right. That's it. Thank you.
And of course, what Ashwapati is going to continue searching for and what he's going to meet is that very thing that's missing here, the Mighty Mother. That's coming very soon to us.
So why has Sri Aurobindo placed this canto here?
Well, I don't know. I could speculate about it, but we've been traveling up the levels of mind for several cantos now. And Sri Aurobindo's teaching is ultimately that mind is a secondary power. And when it's not connected to the knowledge of soul, it's really a servant. Properly, and it's proper. It's a servant of soul, and it's not a creator of knowledge. It's an organizer of knowledge. Doesn't create knowledge. So what it creates here, and what Ashwapati sees in this canto is, there is a creation here, but it's all just, it's fake, because it's not whole. Somewhere he says in there in this canto. He says, what it knew was an image in a broken glass.
Right.
What it saw was real, but its sight untrue. So it does see, but its sight is limited because it's mind. It's a partial. Ashwapati has been climbing this stair of worlds, looking for the answer to his aspiration, and he's gone through these earlier worlds, and now he's gone through mind, and found all these great things in mind, but the self of mind. You know, when you can really actually get to what mind is itself, it's a paralyzed power without the knowledge of the soul.
In terms of the location, what I'm seeing is, so we have just gone through the God kingdoms and Godheads of the little mind, of the greater mind, then the heavens of the ideal, and all of that is describing, I believe, levels of mind. And now we come into the self of mind, where the lack is exposed, and after this we go into the world soul. So it's like he has explored all levels of mind, from the low to the highest, and sees its shortcoming, and now we enter the world soul. A covert answer to his seeking came.
And then the one, the canto after that is the Kingdoms of the Greater Knowledge. So we're going to be going past mind, at least what we've realized as human beings, to the larger realms.
Right, and after that, pursuit of the unknowable, and then the adoration of the Divine Mother. We get there.
It's almost like this canto of negation, the self of mind, is a necessary part of the journey. Especially for us, I don't know if it, and maybe it is for Ashwapati, but for us, because we're mental beings and that's what we rely on. And Mindful Al just appeared.
Yeah, yoo-hoo. Marco.
I think it's AI, not Al.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I lost track of time.
Hi. Well, you're just in time for us to read it again, so. We are okay. Book 2, Canto 13, The Self of Mind.
And I just got a message from Mateo also saying he forgot he was involved in the
inauguration,
yeah.
Yeah, me too. And then I was checking my email and I saw a message from Zoom that there had been a recording. And then I thought that maybe nobody showed up or one or two people showed up. And anyhow, I don't even have the book with me. I'm going to let you continue and then I'll sort of bring my mind. I'll focus myself. I don't feel like I can read right now. I've just been inside and doing random things. So I'll listen. And then weave myself in when I can.
Yeah, nice to have you. So shall I start over?
Why don't you start? Because John Robert started, so it'll be a different order.
Book 2, the Book of the Traveler of the Worlds, Canto 13, In the Self of Mind. At last there came a bare, indifferent sky where silence listened to the cosmic voice, but answered nothing to a million calls. The soul's endless question met with no response. An abrupt conclusion ended eager hopes, a deep cessation in a mighty calm, a finis line on the last page of thought, and a margin and a blank of wordless peace. There paused the climbing hierarchy of worlds. He stood on a wide arc of summit space, alone with an enormous self of mind, which held all life in a corner of its vasts. Omnipotent, immobile, and aloof, in the world which sprang from it, it took no part. It gave no heed to the paeans of victory. It was indifferent to its own defeats. It heard the cry of grief and made no sign. Impartial fell its gaze on evil and good. It saw destruction come and did not move. An equal cause of things, a lonely seer and master of its multitude of forms, it acted not, but bore all thoughts and deeds, the witness lord of nature's myriad acts, consenting to the movements of her force. His mind reflected this vast quietism. This witness hush is the thinker's secret base. Hidden in silent depths, the word is formed. From hidden silences, the act is born into the voiceful mind, the laboring world. In secrecy wraps the seed, the eternal sows silence. In secrecy wraps the seed, the eternal soul's silence, the mystic birthplace of the soul.
In God's supreme, withdrawn, and timeless hush, a seeing self and potent energy met. The silence knew itself, and thought took form. Self-made from the dual power, creation rose. In the still self, he lived, and it in him. Its mute, immemorable listening depths, its vastness, and its stillness were his own. One being with it, he grew wide, powerful, free. Apart, unbound, he looked on all things done. As one who builds his own imagined scenes and loses not himself in what he sees, spectator of a drama self-conceived, he looked on the world and watched its motive thoughts with the burden of luminous prophecy in their eyes. Its forces, with their feet of wind and fire, arisen from the dumbness in his soul. All now he seemed to understand and know. Desire came not, nor any gust of will. The great perturbed inquirer lost his task. Nothing was asked nor wanted anymore. There he could stay, the self, the silence one. His soul had peace. It knew the cosmic whole. Then suddenly a luminous finger fell on all things seen or touched or heard or felt, and showed his mind that nothing could be known. That must be reached from which all knowledge comes. The skeptic ray disrupted all that seems and smote at the very roots of thought and sense. In a universe of nescience, they have grown, aspiring towards a superconscient sun. Playing in shine and rain from heavenlier skies, they never can win, however high their reach, or overpass, however keen their probe.
A doubt corroded even the means to think. Distrust was thrown upon mind's instrument. All that it takes for reality's shining coin, proved fact, fixed inference, deduction clear, firm theory, assured significance, appeared as frauds upon time's credit bank, or assets valueless in truth's treasury. An ignorance on an uneasy throne, travestied with a fortuitous sovereignty, a figure of knowledge garbed in dubious words, and tinsel thought forms brightly inadequate. A labor in the dark, dazzled by half-life. A labor in the dark, dazzled by half-light. What it knew was an image in a broken glass. What it saw was real, but its sight untrue. All the ideas in its vast repertory were like the mutterings of a transient cloud that spent itself in sound and left no trace. A frail house hanging in uncertain air, the thin, ingenious web round which it moves, put out a while on the tree of the universe and gathered up into itself again, was only a trap to catch life's insect food. Winged thoughts that flutter fragile in brief light, but dead, once captured in fixed forms of mind, aims puny, but looming large in man's small scale, flickers of imagination's brilliant gauze, and cobweb-wrapped beliefs alive no more. The magic hut of built-up certitudes, made out of glittering dust and bright moonshine, in which it shrines its image of the real, collapsed into the nescience whence it rose. Only a gleam was there of simple facts that shroud the mystery lurking in their glow, and falsehoods based on hidden realities by which they live until they fall from time. Our mind is a house haunted by the slain past, ideas soon mummified, ghosts of old truths, God's spontaneities tied with formal strings and packed into drawers of reason's trim bureau, a grave of lost opportunities, or an office for misuse of soul and life, and all the waste man makes of heaven's gifts, and all his squanderings of nature's store, a stage for the comedy of ignorance.
The world seemed a long, aeonic failure's scene. All sterile grew, no base was left secure. Assailed by the edge of the convicting beam, the builder reason lost her confidence in the successful slight and turn of thought that makes the soul the prisoner of a phrase. Its highest wisdom was a brilliant guess. Its mighty structured science of the world's a passing light on being's surfaces. There was nothing there but a schema drawn by sense, a substitute for eternal mysteries, a scrawl figure of reality, a plan and elevation by the architect word imposed upon the semblances of time. Existence self was shadowed by a doubt. Almost it seemed a lotus leaf afloat on a nude pool of cosmic nothingness. This great spectator and creator mind was only some half-seeing's delegate, a veil that hung between the soul and light, an idol, not the living body of God. Even the still spirit that looks upon its works was some pale front of the unknowable. A shadow seemed the wide and witness self, its liberation and immobile calm, a void recoil of being from time-made things, not the self-vision of eternity. Deep peace was there, but not the nameless force. Our sweet and mighty mother was not there, who gathers to her bosom her children's lives, her clasp that takes the world into her arms in the fathomless rapture of the infinite, the bliss that is creation's splendid grain, or the white passion of God ecstasy that laughs in the blaze of the boundless heart of love.
A greater spirit than the self of mind must answer to the questioning of his soul. For here was no firm clue and no sure road. High climbing pathways ceased in the unknown. An artist's sight constructed the beyond in contrary patterns and conflicting hues. A part experience fragmented the whole. He looked above. He looked above, but all was blank and still. A sapphire firmament of abstract thought escaped into a formless vacancy. He looked below, but all was dark and mute. A noise was heard between a thought and prayer, a strife, a labor without end or pause. A vain and ignorant seeking raised its voice. A rumor and a movement and a call, a foaming mass, a cry innumerable rolled ever upon the ocean surge of life along the coasts of mortal ignorance. On its unstable and enormous breast, beings and forces, forms, ideas like waves jostled for figure and supremacy, and rose and sank and rose again in time. And at the bottom of the sleepless stir, a nothingness, parent of the struggling worlds, a huge creator death, a mystic void, forever sustaining the irrational cry, forever excluding the supernal word, motionless, refusing question and response, reposed beneath the voices and the march, the dim in conscience, dumb in certitude.
Two firmaments of darkness and of light opposed their limits to the spirit's walk. It moved veiled in from the self's infinity in a world of beings and momentary events where all must die to live and live to die, immortal by renewed mortality. It wandered in the spiral of its acts or ran around the cycles of its thought, yet was no more than its original self and knew no more than when it first began. To be was a prison, extinction the escape. End of Canto 13.
I'm glad it was a short one. And it's, I feel like I've gotten some kind of psychic whiplash going from the inauguration and the pomp and circumstance and grandiose rituals of the nation state. And although it was a very interesting inauguration and as a artifact of language or an expression of language, it's interesting to compare and contrast, or at least coming from that kind of event pretty unexpectedly to this. I didn't expect I'd be sitting here right now with you. I just didn't. The wires got crossed in my mind. But I don't know what I want to say about that, only that I'm noting the difference in consciousness that I was in sitting in front of the TV watching this event and reflecting on the historical nature of it and what a nightmare the last 4 years have been, actually. The sense that dream is changing, there's a significant shift in that dream. And then the perspective that Aurobindo encapsulates in this canto, which I've just begun resonating with like another song, like I've turned the radio dial and I'm not sure what music I'm listening to. It's a different transmission, but it almost like zooms completely away from the human scene and from, you know, the patterns and the predictable, but you know, still like interesting and novel, like forms of you know, of human beings trying to figure out how to live on the earth, you know, and how to deal with their differences. I just think it's very interesting. There was a poem too read and at the inauguration by a young Black woman who looked like a queen, and her poem was very interesting. It was a kind of an evocation of the spirit of America, the spirit of the nation, and was also maybe contributing to the theme of unity, the theme that Biden wants to you know, bring to his presidency and to the country. I think it's just very interesting how we as humans construct our social relations with deep language and with just deep ideas about who we are and you know, what the meaning of our being here is. And that inauguration, this transition from an age of chaos, an age of like the disintegration and assault, you know, on values, an assault on vision, an assault on perspective and evolution and growth. And the attempts that I think the people are making to overcome that and to grow beyond the merely mental and grow beyond, you know, our mere ideals into an actualization. There's a connection, there's a contrast, and there's an interesting, I think, connection. And so, I know I come, my head is a bit spinning too, just because I was up very late. I've been working overtime on another project. So it's just a very interesting moment. And I'm glad I pressed the Zoom button and said, I'm just going to get on and see if they're there. Because I was about to write an email like apologizing, and I'm like, maybe they're on the line. I'll get to take part, and I'm glad I did. So thank you for the reading. And I would love to go through this again, this canto, now or later. I'm not sure I'm in the mind to receive it now, as I may be, you know, with a little bit more tranquility. I appreciate that you all showed up.
I was actually thinking it would be lovely for you to read it again later, because you will see interesting parallels or description of what we do with our minds, how limited it is, even when we try. Yeah.
I've also been working on a poem, or a part of a poem, that intersects with this and the kind of limitations of the mind, like in my personal experience, but also reflecting on the national experience and on the human the human situation. I'm glad that you've brought that to my attention, because I think they constellate these language events and these poetic experiences, and these political experiences, they constellate.
Care to share?
Well, I mean, part of what, you know, the events of the last few months, the election, you know, and then the period from the time of, you know, the election to the present, and then just this past week, I have been trying to reckon with what it means for me as a poet and in the language that I use to have an identity as an American, like have a historical identity, be part of what is going on, have some part in it, right? And be a product of it on the one hand, but also a participant and a contributor to it. And what is the language that I cultivate within myself, like in my heart, the language that means something to me and that like holds my my feelings, my moods, my perspectives, holds my meanings? Like, how does that relate to the language that I was taught, the language that formed the social landscape that I grew up in, which was an American one? And, you know, it's not just the political ideas or the ideology, it's also the culture. And in what ways have the ideals and the rhetoric of enlightenment, the Western Enlightenment, and of the democratic idea, how did those interact with the kind of culture that's actually grown and the habits that have been formed around that culture? And, you know, we've all come of age in a tremendously transformational time, not just politically, like eventful happenings, but in terms of how we communicate and even do politics, like the fact that we're doing this on screens, I remember just dreaming about the possibility of being able to talk to people by video phone. It was the idea that I had when I was a kid. But I spent a lot of time watching TV and a lot of time just being infused, you know, with all of the messaging, from the high rhetoric to a lot of advertising to a lot of television programming. And how did that milieu create the conditions for the country that we experience today and the larger world? Because, you know, the it's not just an American thing, it's a global emergence. And America is a special place because it's such a mixture of people, and because, you know, because it got to, and this goes to our conversation, John Robert, about space. Something got to happen here that couldn't happen in Europe, but was sort of fomented in Europe, and then came together with Africans, and came together with indigenous peoples, and it was a violent and a bloody marriage. You know, that now we are historically, as a people, quote unquote, are figuring out the terms of, like, how can we make it work, like, or not. Because it doesn't always work out. And I mean, that's part of what I think many of us have been grappling with, is the possibility that this context, you know, and this kind of mythic super, you know, being that we call the nation, our country, could fall apart. It's not like, and what do we take for granted? What do we appreciate? What are we ashamed of? You know, what are we angry about? It's been hard to grapple with that. Like, I've been really struggling with it. Because they're deeply personal too. Like, the nation got its claws into me, you know, like as a child, and all of us. And for some of us that worked out, and for others it doesn't work out. And I think all of us are conflicted about it internally. And then I'm trying to write a poem that in some way, you know, flows and has music to it. And what I'm learning from Aurobindo and the great masters of poetry is how to, you know, bring elegant language to or elegant, but also true language, a language that brings concretion, that brings, you know, that makes you feel what it's really like to be alive and to be going through all this. So those are my reflections, I guess. And I think the vision that Aurobindo in Savitri has grown, like, is... It's a source for me. It's like something I can draw on, you know. It's a kind of nourishment. It's like having a pantry full of good food, you know, and healthy organic poetry, you know, that is just growing out of the most fecund soil. Whereas a lot of what I grew up on was junk food, and so my poetry has to have both. It can't just have the ideal and the you know, it has to have like the high fructose corn syrup derivatives and the artificial, you know, the food coloring, red number five, and like, it's been a tough fall and winter, I'll just say. This inauguration day, I hope, is not just a political event for the United States, but I hope it signals kind of an inauguration of, you know, that next kind of humanity and divinity that Aurobindo was, you know, was embodying and invoking and transmitting.
Thank you for sharing that. It's interesting. You have two of us here on the screen who did not grow up in this country. So to hear you describe what that was like, whoa. I think the first time I watched television was when I came in the United States. I was in my 40s.
Oh my gosh.
You cannot even imagine that.
I spent a lot of time in front of the TV. It wasn't, my parents didn't put limits on me in the way that I do, and me, my wife and I do with our daughters. But it's because I'm like a living example of the corrosive effects of of junk culture. And at the same time, it's all part of the divine too. So, you know, as kind of ill, as sick as I think that we are as a people, like mentally ill and physically ill. And we have to find it in our hearts to forgive the past and to forgive our folly. And I think that that's maybe where my edge is at. And I wasn't even thinking, you know, that's one of the things about being an American is there's this kind of idea that everybody is an American. You know, it's this sort of weird, implicit kind of imperial projection, you know, onto others. And it's just a tendency that, like, you know,
well, this country is so big, you can travel for days and you're still in the same culture. That doesn't happen in most other places in the world, you know? Especially not where I came from.
Well, that's the thing, is that Americans, you know, had this feeling that we could spread out. And, you know, that was a tragic feeling, but it's gotten kind of sublimated into other areas, from like the really concrete and physical to, you know, to the mental and the psychological, and
economical.
And that can, certainly, yeah. And we're still ruled by like this idea of infinite growth. And we still dread the idea of death and age and you know, annihilation, and the nothingness that Aurobindo said was in the center of this kind of this chaos.
So I just want to mention that there's a quite remarkable and lovely conversation between Anderson Cooper, is that his name? Anderson, and the late night show Stephen Colbert. And they are talking with one another about grief. It is really beautiful. It's remarkable to have two figures that are in the forefront of America, in the public eye, that they are being vulnerable and honest and really beautiful, soul felt. I have it on my Facebook, so you can find it there. Maybe change is possible even in America.
Miracles happen.
Yeah. So, shall we have our little closing meditation, or we want to have more discussion?
Thank you, Marco, for sharing. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. I feel like I could go on. I have a lot to get off my chest, actually. But I also, I think I want to, I like the ritual that we've had of reading together. And in our own small way, it's, you know, it's a way of sustaining a vision, much like the inauguration is a way of sustaining a vision. So the ritual and the pomp and circumstance, I think, has a role to play, even if it may overwhelm and sicken us sometimes. Sometimes it can also, there may be something healing, I think, that wanted to happen today. So hopefully that process, and I feel a lot of grief. I'll share. I'm glad that we could share a moment, you know, in the midst of it.
You want to say some more about your grief? It seems to be right there.
Well, I think we can do better. That's I think the grief is that. And when I say we, I'm kind of mean that. I mean I, and I also mean, I don't necessarily mean we as a group here, and I don't necessarily just mean Americans. I barely identify as an American. You know? But I can't escape it either. So it's an interesting position. It's an interesting place to be. I feel grief over so many things. And there's personal things, but it's not just about me. It's it is all of us, but it's not all of us just as a platitude. The universal isn't just an idea. It's listening to Slavoj Žižek. He's a Croatian philosopher, and he was talking about Hegel and the Hegel's idea of the concrete universal. It resonated with me because you know, really that's where you have to find the universal is in the concrete and the actual. So like us being here now is concrete and actual, and it may be unspoken, it may be unrecorded, it may be unremarked upon, but the fact that we all, you know, join to share our grief and our love, and that's significant, I think. And I realize how much I've taken for granted. So.
Thank you, Marco.
Thank you.
How about we have a fight? Want to say something, Jeffrey?
Well, I just want to say that I don't know what I want to say, really. But no, I don't think I want to say that. I think I'm going to let it go, and we'll... I do appreciate the sharing. I probably have tons to say, but I don't want to say it right now. So.
I didn't want to say it either. I try to put it in the poetry, and then I don't have to get all messy here and there. There you can.
Well, it's good. You bring the awareness of the world right here in this moment, and maybe we'll have a 5-minute meditation, and all hold that precious globe in our awareness with great love.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Marco. I was very touched by your words.
For listening.
Glad you came on.
Too. Okay. Till next time.
All right. Yeah, good night. Goodbye. I don't know why I said good night. Not night for me.
Good night and good luck.